is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the 100th episode of the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to do a special NCAA March Madness Sweet 16 podcast for our 100th episode. Thanks for joining us. Jason, I thought we'd organize it by going through game by game and then sort of making our comments about how the teams got there and then make a pick for each one of the games.
Okay, and obviously we're going to only talk about certain games. We're not going to talk about every single one. We're going to mention everyone, but I don't think, I mean, I personally haven't watched all 48 regular tournament games.
Yeah, we'll try to hit on the highlights and the things that we want to make comments on. Some of the games we'll skip over and just make a quick pick depending on how much we have to say about each particular game. So I'll let you go ahead and read off the
games. All right, so the first game was Duke, North Dakota State. And I'll be completely honest, I didn't watch this game much because I anticipated it being a blowout. And I know I went to see Captain Marvel with my dad, and I walked into the theater, and Duke was only up 2 at halftime. And I was like, could I be missing something extraordinary? And
They've had two relatively, I mean, obviously the Central Florida game was a tough game, and could have arguably gone the other way with a couple different scenarios that had turned out differently. They've not had to this point what you would say is a completely easy path. And now their next game, they're going to take on Virginia Tech.
Who already beat them once this year without Zion.
Correct.
But still, that's a big, I mean, it's a big confidence thing for them.
Let's talk a little bit about that Duke Central Florida game and just give me your thoughts on the ending of how that game
I think Central Florida lost that game on that stupid lob. They got that rebound. It was like minute 20 left. They got the rebound, pushed the ball up the floor, and then threw a lob that wasn't going to happen. That's a situation that it's an inexperienced team, and they're up 4 points with a minute 20 seconds left. You pull that ball, you get that ball across half court. If it's not a clear-cut layup, you pull it out and you kill some clock.
Yeah, I think the time situation there was the key. A lot of people I saw focusing on social media on the fact that they threw the lob. I heard somebody say, I just don't like a lob in general. And I think the reality is that, you know, they threw that lob, and I'm sure the guy 7 out of 10 times, 8 out of 10 times, 9 out of 10 times, they execute that play, and it's a dunk, and they're up 6, and the momentum's all going with them, and it continues on. But sometimes, again, things just happen. And so the pass is a little off. The guy fumbles it. It doesn't go in. Now, all of a sudden, not only did you not score on the possession, but you had a 7 or 8 second possession versus, you know, the potential to run. So
I saw someone say they should have thrown a bounce pass there, and I said I don't really care what kind of pass you throw. I still personally think you coach those players to pull that ball out. It's all about situational awareness. It's kind of like the whole J.R. Smith getting the rebound at the end of game one of the finals last year and not knowing that there was time in the clock and the game was tied.
And it shows you that at all levels of basketball, that understanding clock management and knowing time and score is key. And that's one of the things as a coach that, you know, you always preach to your players is make sure you know the time and score. So when it's a free throw or it's an out of bounds or there's a stop and play, make sure you look and you know time and score and you have, you know how many timeouts you have. We had a situation actually in my son's AAU tournament this weekend, Jay, where we were down by 2 in this tournament and you only get one timeout per game. It's a running clock until the last minute, and we were down by 2 and this team called their second timeout with under a minute to go in the game.
Michigan situation.
Yeah, the Chris Webber situation. Called it without having one. And then the rules stated that you got possession of the ball plus you were awarded 2 points. So that tied the score for us. So we got the ball back.
Did we win?
We didn't score on our last possession. We did not score. We missed a shot. But then it went to, this tournament is strange, it goes to like a soccer-style shootout of free throws. So you go back and forth.
It's like Head Start Basketball.
So you get 3, but it's 3 free throws. So you have to pick 3 shooters. So the other team had 2 shooters, so you alternate. And we shot first. So we made the first one. They made the first one. We made the second one on a ball that bounced around the rim like 14 times and then went in. They missed the second one. then we missed the, or we made the third one, and so we ended up winning.
Was Cal one of those?
Cal three? Was not one of the shooters. He was not one. He was not one of the shooters. So anyway, so we won. So it was a good weekend for my son's
AE team. Sorry.
Not that anyone cares. It was,
yeah, that's funny.
We went 3-1, but you got to know time and score is the is the ultimate situation. Then the other thing that was, you know, that played itself out was the RJ Barrett push off on the
free throw.
But here's what I'll say is when you're the guy that's boxing out there who basically turned and didn't make any contact and just kind of stood, you open yourself up for somebody pushing you out of the way, and you're dependent there on the referee making that call in that situation. And I just don't know that that's
going to happen. I'm totally about that. I think I even texted you and Trevor last night. Oh, that guy totally pushed off. I think if he didn't get the rebound, the guy on the other side of the ball was going to get the rebound. I went back and watched the play a few times. The other guy had clearly beaten, and he didn't push off at all. I think the other Duke guy would have gotten the rebound. Now, who knows if he would have made the free throw or not. But I think either way, they both did a terrible job. And I think that also plays into the whole Taco getting fouled out situation, which, by the way, is he an NBA player?
I don't know.
7'6".
I've cracked up the number of, honestly, I don't think I've seen him play. I've never seen him play before this game. And watching the highlights of him dunking basically flat-footed, it was hilarious. He's hanging on the rim, and I'm like, why does he have to hang on the rim? His feet are still on the ground. It was bizarre.
I have to say some team either drafts him or brings him into summer league and just to throw at the wall and see what happens. Because I think, he's 7'6". If you could put him in there even for just to disrupt, could you imagine him playing defense? Maybe he could stop James Harden. He'd just stand in the middle when James Harden goes to the basket.
Here's what I'll say. 20 years ago, he's definitely in the league. There's no question. He's Mark Eaton. He's Sean Bradley. He's one of these guys that just, you can plant him in the key. He's guarding somebody on offense. You kind of move him out of the way. He posts up, whatever. In today's league, I'm not sure.
Do you think he gets a shot, though?
Oh, yeah, he gets, come on, he's 7'6". He's going to get a shot. But I just don't know that he's mobile enough that you can play him. And, again, maybe he sticks around for 10 years as a 12th man, and he's a regular season player, and, get to the playoffs, and he's kind of marginalized. But I think he's an NBA player.
Okay.
And then the last thing about the Duke game, the final play.
We're going to have a long time if we do.
Yeah, this is our favorite. Even though Duke's probably my least favorite team because we've spent so much time talking about Zion all year that I feel like we should.
We haven't even mentioned. This is the first time we've even mentioned him.
We haven't mentioned Zion, who again was incredible in that game.
He was incredible in both games.
He's so far and away better than anybody in the country that it's not. It's not even close. I just don't see how. He's clearly the number one pick. There's nothing that's going to change that, and he's been fantastic.
Yeah.
All year, and he was fantastic in these two games. But, that last play, kid for Central Florida drives, nice leaning bank shot. Right, it's right there. It's legitimately right there on the rim. And then the tip, crawls around three-quarters of the rim and then falls off. It's, again, when you talk about games being a matter of inches, the guy puts a little bit more oomph on that first shot, and it goes 2 inches to the left on the backboard, and it goes in, and then the tip, whatever, take a little bit off. Listen, the tip or a little bit more.
You don't know how much I was hoping that ball went in the basket, because half the brackets, explosion.
Would have been gone.
Explosion.
For sure. Yep.
So it would have been fun. It would have been way more fun to go to work today and talk about Duke losing personally.
But. All right, so we already talked about Zion, obviously. No change in his status as the number one pick.
Number one pick. There's not.
What's your feeling on RJ Barrett at this point?
I would take him at 5. Maybe 4.
He worries me. I watch him play, and I just see a guy who
very passive.
Very passive. I think at this point thinks he's better than he is, and again, I don't know what gives me that feeling, but I just watch him and I just think, man, he looks like a guy who thinks he can do whatever he wants, but he really can't. I heard somebody make a comment, and I kind of went back and watched it. I thought the person who made the comment was a little bit strong, but somebody said on that last play, they're like, how can you give such a poor effort on the very last play where Central Florida, got the tip? And I watched Barrett, and he kind of just stood. When the kid went up for the first shot, his guy or somebody in that vicinity was the kid who went in and got the tip, and Barrett just kind of stood the whole time and watched. And I don't think that's necessarily a fair criticism, simply because a lot of times in those situations, you know, you think the clock's going to expire and you're not sure exactly how much time it's going and whatever. So it's not really that unusual for somebody just to stand. But I will say that I would be very, very nervous to pick him in the top five. I just there's something about him I don't like. I don't like him as an NBA player. Something about him I don't like. I don't know what it is, but
All right. I respect that. All right. So the next games, I'll be honest, I really didn't watch much of Liberty Mississippi or Virginia Tech St. Louis. I did watch Liberty Virginia Tech yesterday. I was very impressed with Virginia Tech. I thought they looked pretty good. Liberty came out and kind of punched them in the mouth to start the game. And I think the coach did a really good job keeping their composure and really they kind of held it together. And then they just kind of ran away with it in the second half. So, you know, Virginia, as we said before, Virginia Tech already beat Duke once. Now, obviously, that was without Zion. But I think the most important thing that came out of those first two games, not to rehash the Duke thing, but I think that there's a blueprint to beat them. The blueprint is force them to shoot threes, because other than really Reddish, I think, everyone was just bricking threes. That point guard, I couldn't believe, I don't know how much of the game yesterday you watched. Taylor, I think his name is, they were literally just welcoming Taylor. You know how we watched Draymond Green?
Right, yeah, they're not a good three-point shooter.
They were just letting Taylor shoot threes. So I think the two games that played, you know, more yesterday's game than anything was really impressive how they kind of invited them to shoot threes. And obviously Duke will have games where they'll make them. But I think they're playing the percentages, and they were just letting that Taylor guy. He shot five threes in a row and bricked them all
until he made the fifth one. I mean, that's probably their biggest weakness, is not being able to shoot threes very well.
So it'll be interesting to see if Virginia Tech employs a similar strategy, already beating them once without Zion.
Buzz Williams is a good coach at Virginia Tech. You know, came from Marquette. He's a good coach, knows what he's doing. So I won't be surprised if they have a good game plan and give Duke everything they can.
Considering they've already played them twice, right?
Considering everything that they, you know, possibly could want. All right, next game, we're still in the East Regional. We're talking LSU is going to take on Michigan State in that next game.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on those two teams?
I will say, you know, Michigan State has probably looked like their second best team in the tournament since the start of it, for me. I mean, obviously, I've not watched every single game, but I think the only team, we'll talk about them a little bit, UNC has looked way better than pretty much everyone and obviously that comes with the seeding. But Michigan State, I mean, you know, Bradley hung with them for a bit, and you know the whole Izzo thing that came up. And
yeah, let's talk about that in a second.
God, yeah, and then I mean they'd already played Minnesota twice and beaten them, so yeah, they have a good game plan. They know those players and everything. But I have to say, Michigan State, and I'm really pulling for them, since I think that's the only way I'm gonna win my bracket is if Michigan State gets all the way through. So I'm pulling for them, but
my bracket's been busted. So
yeah, but no worries. I think Michigan State has definitely looked really good, and LSU, you know, I think in both games they've had big leads and then blown them a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see how they look against Michigan State. And you know, I never like to play Apple like the comparison game, but Michigan State beat Maryland both times by like 18 points. And here, LSU only beat.
So who you got in that game?
Oh, I got Michigan State.
All right, I got LSU.
Why? Just to be contrarian?
Just to be contrarian. Okay. All right, let's talk Izzo. You know, there was obviously a big firestorm after the video of Izzo yelling at the kid coming off the floor, getting right in his face, having to be restrained by a couple of his players. And then in the huddle, when he was sitting on the stool and then basically lunging at the kid again and having some of his players have to restrain him. And I think there's a bunch of different ways you can look at this. You know, the kind of, if you played it out on social media, there was a very it was a very black and white discussion where either he was totally wrong or he was totally justified in what he did. And I think that there's some nuances to, you know, what's being said. One of the point of people who said that, you know, what he did was fine and he's holding people accountable, I think if you've played high-level sports, especially if you're someone who's around my age, you've been yelled at before, and you've been yelled at in such a way that if somebody had it on video, that you would probably look at it and say, ooh, that wasn't a very positive way for that coach to...
It all goes back to the social media age. I mean...
Right. I mean, everything now is captured and everything is seen. And so if you just look at that in isolation, it looks pretty bad.
Could you imagine if Bobby Knight was a coach in this day and age?
I had a conversation with someone the other day about if you went back and read John Feinstein's book, Season on the Brink, and you really go back and you read the details of what Knight did, what Knight said, how he behaved, the way he treated kids. And it's hard to believe that, you know, he was able to, and again, get away with it is the wrong word, but it's hard to believe that he was able to behave in those ways and keep his job. But it was just such a different era. Like, things just didn't come out in the same way. Even reporters that were covering it, it just wasn't instantaneous. Whereas now, that happens with Izzo, and within 5 seconds, there's... It's all over the internet. Everybody has an opinion.
Where do you fall on the opinion scale?
So here's where I fall on it. One is, I wouldn't want to play for somebody that was going to yell at me that way, because that doesn't motivate me. Someone screaming at me and getting in my face and lunging at me when you're an adult and I'm an 18-year-old kid, that doesn't motivate me at all.
Okay.
So from that standpoint, I would never coach that way. I would never want somebody that my own kid to be coached by somebody that way. And yet at the same time, if I was coached that way, I would be totally fine with it. I wouldn't feel the need to put it on social media or criticize. And the other thing is, if you go to Michigan State and you know Tom Izzo and you know his reputation and you're a kid, you know that that's part of the package. And again, all that being said, I can still see where if you're asking your players to have composure, if you're asking your players to keep themselves under control, and 18 and 19 year old players on your team are having to restrain you from going after someone, to me that's a problem. And one of the most interesting comments that I saw, which I think is 100% correct, is that a lot of the people who were making comments that, oh, you have to be able to hold players accountable, and you know, there's a toughness element, and there's this and there's that, and I think that people forget that there's more than one way to hold somebody accountable. I can hold you accountable without screaming at you like a maniac in front of 15,000 people in a national television audience. And again, that's not to say that, you know, it happens. It's happened. It happened to me. It's happened to athletes, you know, forever. And some guys do respond favorably to that type of coaching and that type of motivation. I wasn't one of those people, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't work for somebody else. So I tend to look at it as, like I said, I wouldn't want that to happen to me. I would never coach that way myself. But yet I know that it's a factor in high-level athletics. It's something that happens. But I do think there's more ways to hold a kid accountable than just to scream at him.
I totally understand your point. I think it was just, once again, blown way out of proportion. And I understand that what it looked like and everything, but I don't remember who tweeted it, but I saw something, an interesting tweet that someone wrote, if you think that was bad, you should go see NBA players and halftime film when they're looking at film at halftime. I don't know, did you see that tweet? Or,
yes.
So I think, and it's, I guess the players are yelling at each other and things like that. So, you know, I think in the grand scheme of things, yeah, it's not probably a good look, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, I would never coach like that either. I think, you know, obviously I'm not Tom Izzo, so I don't have
your resume strength is not quite as strong enough to support that.
I just think, I, you know, I'm just kind of like, it is what it is, and you know, I just don't, I think it was just blown way out of proportion, and it's the whole social media age, and I don't think you're going to change anyone's minds either way. I think you feel one way or the other, and I thought Scott Van Pelt, I don't know if you saw his last 2 minutes, I thought that was the way that he kind of put it together, and it was, I think he does a really good job, but I think, you know, I think he made points on either side of it and just saying, like, listen, it was what it was, and what we saw might not exactly be how he is. And all the players that have played for Izzo in the past, including Draymond Green and everything, and it's funny that Draymond Green is kind of the same kind of character as Izzo, but anyways, they kind of all came to his defense and said, listen, he's just holding the kid accountable and whatnot, but like you said, there's more than one way to do that.
And there's different ways to get, you know, you got to coach to your personality.
Yeah.
And you've got to... You know, you got to get after guys and motivate them and make sure that you're getting the most out of them. Your job as a coach is to get the most out of your team.
Well, it was seemingly motivational because they ended up pulling that game out, and then they handled Minnesota pretty nicely.
Yeah, so. And there's different ways to do it, and Izzo has one way, and somebody else might have a different way. But if you've played high-level athletics, I can almost guarantee that you've experienced somebody getting after you in a way that
I didn't play high-level athletics, and I had
a coach. Somebody get after you in a way. So, and again, you handle it.
Yep.
The thing is as a player, you learn to handle that. You know, you're always taught, at least I was, that in those cases you tune out the way it's being said and you tune yourself into the message that's trying to be taught. And it's not always easy to do that, but if you've been in those situations, you understand it and you figure out how to handle it. Yep. So,
all right, so we're going to move to the West now. The next game, we'll get into the games. It'll be Gonzaga, Florida State. But before we do that, we have to talk about Murray State.
So that was the first time really I had seen anything besides highlights of Ja Morant. I watched the whole entire – that was probably the only tournament game I think I watched in its entirety was his first game.
Against Marquette?
Against Marquette, and he was electric in that game.
And he was electric against Florida State, at least in the first half, and I think he got tired. But
So let's talk about what are the things that are good about him. One is he's super athletic. Two, he has really, really good vision. I mean,
his core vision is outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, he saw things and made passes that, again, most guys don't make. And then the other thing I liked about him is not only did he make those, I don't even want to say spectacular passes, but he also made the simple pass.
Yep.
Because I think guys that can make the simple pass, meaning they just, there's a guy open and the ball comes to me and I move the ball to that next guy. When you can combine the ability to make the spectacular pass with the willingness to make the simple pass, now you've really got something. So there's no doubt that he has great great athleticism. He also has a great feel for passing. I'm a little bit, I don't know if worried, but the one thing that I'm a little shaky on is his release point on his shot, because he shoots the ball from a little bit low, kind of in front of his chin, as opposed to getting that ball up high where he could shoot over, especially as a smaller guard. So I worry a little bit about that at the next level, but I think he's such a good passer and he's such a good athlete that he'll be able to figure it out. So I know we talked about, you know, slotting him as, would we be happy if the Cavs got him? And in a vacuum, I really like him as a player. I'm not sure that he's a great fit with Sexton, simply because I think they're similar, although Sexton probably is more of a scorer and Morant is probably more of a distributor. But I don't know if your motivation is to try to contend for an NBA title and you have two guards who are 6'1", 6'2", whatever they are, I don't know that that's a formula in the league today for being able to win an NBA title. And again, the Cavs are a long way away from that. And if we end up with Morant and not Zion, we're even further away from winning an NBA title. Yeah. But I think he's a good prospect. And I think he's definitely going to go in the top five without any question after what he did in these two games.
I think those two games put him as the number two. And I don't think there's, this is my opinion. Now, maybe Barrett will.
Depends on need. Depends on what team.
Yeah, that's also true. I think he has to be either two or three. I don't think there's any way around that.
I think Morant has more of a star quality than Barrett. Barrett just seems like he has kind of a flat, dull personality.
Yeah, he's not electric.
Morant seems like he is going to inspire teammates and really, you know, just be a great leader for a team. So I'd be happy if the Cavs got him. If we don't get Zion, I'd be more than happy with Morant.
So just kind of off of that,
I'm gonna pick Florida State in this game.
Over Gonzaga?
Yes.
That's who I agree with you. I'm not being contrarian.
I think Florida State.
They've also looked really good.
I think I said it in the previous podcast that we did on the, you know, picking our Final Four, that if you look at Florida State, I said it came down to Florida State and Buffalo for me, and obviously Buffalo, that was not a good pick. But they did not play well, and Texas Tech played really well. But that being said, I did say Florida State.
Should we say what Trevor said? The Mac sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. You gotta at least be a homer for the league that you came.
Trevor Huffman was not a homer. Just so you know that
he was not. And I don't know. Did you listen to his podcast with Winterhurst?
No, I have not listened to the Winterhurst podcast. All right, yet.
So it was good. So shout out to Trevor and his post game podcast. But he had Brian Windhorst on, and Wendy had covered the his Kent State team in 2002, and they were talking about how good the MAC was back then, and they were going through guys who played in the NBA that were in the league when Trevor was a senior. I think they counted seven, and Winhurst was saying, you know, what NBA player has the MAC produced in the last, I don't know, he said 5 to 10 years, and there's almost nobody. And even in the era that I played, there were guys that, you know, that came out of the MAC that played in the league. And
still sad that Mike Klinzing's name
could be. Still sad that I wasn't one of them, but I don't think my athleticism would have allowed for that to happen.
Sneaky
too
athletic.
Well. Yeah, sneaky, very sneaky.
So I
think Florida State's going to win that game. Right. Again, three number one seeds came out of their league.
Yep.
I think they're going to beat Gonzaga.
Yep. All right. So the next game, we already kind of covered the Buffalo game. Texas Tech has looked really good, and Texas Tech's Michigan, and I picked Michigan in the Final Four down here. I'm a little concerned that Texas Tech's going to beat them.
Texas Tech looked really good against Buffalo.
Culver looks good. He looks like the real deal. I think he's another guy that they can talk about being a top five pick. He's managed the floor well. He looks like he knows what he's doing. And I think he'll be definitely a good NBA player.
Yeah, like I said, I saw Buffalo in person this year. I came away super impressed by them. And the fact that they basically got run out of the gym by Texas Tech was impressive to me. Because, again, I was very impressed by Buffalo when I saw them. And I didn't foresee what happened to them happening. So if I was going to pick this game, I would pick Texas Tech to
I'm strictly picking Michigan because I picked them in the Final Four. Them.
Fair enough.
But I'm concerned.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. So then our next game is going to be Virginia versus Oregon. And Virginia has not impressed me at all. And they did a better job yesterday taking care of Oklahoma. But that Gardner-Webb game was closer than the score indicates.
It was. It really was.
And
they looked a little shaky there for a while.
I am picking Oregon. I think Oregon is going to beat Virginia.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with you. And here's why. I was not a fan of Virginia going in. I did not pick them to get out of this bracket. My team that I picked, Villanova, is out. So take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt. But I think Virginia had a psychological barrier to get over in that first game, especially as a 1 versus a 16. And then when it looked a little dicey at halftime and, I'm sure they were very, very nervous. So you get out of that game, they play a little bit better in the second game there against Oklahoma. Now they're going in, they have what in theory is the easiest Sweet 16 game, because really Oregon's the only double-digit seed, I think, that's
they
left.
They are the only double-digit. No, there's a 10. Yeah, they are the only double-digit seed.
I think they're the...
They're the highest seed. I think 5 was the highest one other than them.
So, again, this is all theoretical on paper. On paper, Virginia has the easiest Sweet 16 game of any team. So I'm going to go ahead in this game and pick Virginia, despite the fact that I'm not really sold on their style of play. I'm not really sold on them as a legitimate contender to win the title, but I think they're going to beat Oregon.
So, you know what I found interesting was ESPN reseeded all 16 teams.
Yes, where did Virginia get seeded?
Virginia was like 6 or 7.
Okay.
Oregon was like 10 or 11.
Okay, and,
and Tennessee was 16.
Tennessee was 16.
Purely, well, we'll talk about that in a second, but I think it's primarily because of yesterday's game. I don't know how much of it you saw.
I did not see any of that.
So we'll talk about that in a second. But I'm picking Oregon just because I just don't have faith in Virginia, and you know what? I'm going to keep picking against them.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I'm not a big fan of Virginia, but I think that a 1 versus a 12 sets up pretty nicely for them. I think they got over the psychological hurdle of the 1 beating the 16, and you go from there.
All right, the next game, Purdue and Tennessee. So Tennessee yesterday, they were up 26 points in the first half.
I read something where
somebody
from Iowa said like Iowa was just horrendous in that first half.
They went to overtime. They blew a 26 or 25 point game lead. And by the way, so I'm out golfing yesterday. So I was golfing yesterday, 54 degrees. It was beautiful. I went out golfing. I checked the score at the end of the, like, I think it was like fourth hole or fifth hole. Tennessee's up 22 points. And I'm like, well, this game's first game of the day is over. I'm done. So we golf. I go in turn to get a hot dog. And I look at the scoreboard and I see Tennessee and Iowa are tied. I'm like, wait, what happened? That happened in a matter of three holes. It was a 22-point game, and it was like that. So I just don't think Tennessee looked good in the second half, and everyone's against them. Now, maybe that makes them kind of under the radar situation, but Purdue has looked really, really good in both games. Like, they looked really good against Villanova. They could pull South region.
Let's say this. Which bracket are you least impressed with of the four?
This one for sure.
Whoever comes out of this bracket has no chance to win the title. I'm calling it now.
I don't think you and I could make an argument that we wouldn't be surprised if any of these four teams came out of the bracket. Would you agree with that statement?
I'd be surprised if it's Oregon, but I don't know. But I mean, it wouldn't. I don't think any of these teams, like I said, I don't think any of these teams have a legitimate chance to win the title.
Yeah.
You said you were picking who? Purdue in that game?
I'm picking Purdue.
All right, I'll just go the other way. I'll pick Tennessee. Here's why. I'll just say that's the game. You know, if you're going to go on a run, you got to win a game that you're not supposed to win.
Okay.
And so that's their game. So I'll go with Tennessee to go and match up with Virginia in the Elite Eight.
All right, so we're sliding down to the Midwest region. The first game is North Carolina-Auburn. North Carolina's against Washington yesterday was a lot closer than the score indicates. I know at the start of the second half, I think it was only a 6-point game or an 8-point game, and then ended up winning by 22. Obviously, I think talent just outplayed. UNC's, though, probably looked the most impressive other than them. They're the best team, and Michigan State, in my opinion, is the second best team. They've just been very impressive. I think, the Iona game was more of a discrepancy than the 15-point game. I think there was some garbage time Iona caught some ground.
Yeah,
I think North Carolina is playing some, freshmen that hardly played at all because they were up 26 points or something like that. And it ended up being a 15-point game, but I think it was. So I think North Carolina wins that game against Auburn because, I mean, I don't know. The SEC is not really that impressive to me.
Carolina has a nice balance. They've got some young guys with Nasir Little, and then they've got, obviously, Luke May, who's hugely experienced.
I think he's an NBA player, by the way.
Luke May?
I think he's a 10th man.
He's an NBA player. He's going to make it. He's going to make it in the league.
He's only going to make it in the league because Alan Stein was his trainer.
That's right. I read that story as well and saw that Alan worked with him when he was maybe, a freshman or something?
He was a sophomore in high school. And he's really proud of him even though he's a Duke. And he says that as a lifelong Duke fan, I think is what Alan said.
Yeah, we won't hold that against Alan.
Yeah.
I think Carolina wins that game against Auburn. Auburn was impressive against Kansas. They played really well against Kansas, but I think Carolina moves on and beats Auburn.
And I personally think Kansas is overrated this year. I don't think they were that good.
Yeah, they didn't have a great season.
I'm also not a huge fan of Bill Self. That's a discussion another day. I just never liked him as a coach. I don't know why. But
yeah, well, his teams have tended to, I don't know if underachieve is the right word, but they haven't gone as far as the tournament as you would expect a lot of years. So
fun fact, the only person that lost their champion in my bracket that I run picked Kansas to win it all.
Okay.
So that was the only person out of 75
Everybody
brackets.
Else still has their
Everyone,
team.
75 well, brackets, only one bracket lost their champion.
Well,
but
you have all the 1, 2, and 3 seeds are
and,
in. So
and if Duke,
that covers
if,
most
if
everybody.
Duke would have lost yesterday, 38 people would have lost their champion. So yeah. It would have been fun.
Yeah, that would have made that would have opened it up. Would have made it wide open.
All right, and then the last game is going to be Houston and Kentucky. Now, I will say, Ohio State impressed me. I mean, obviously their best player is suspended, right? That's right?
Correct.
So I thought they played really well against Iowa State, and they held their own against Houston, and then I think Houston just kind of said, okay, no more playing around, and did that. So I think I don't really know. Wofford did a good job against Kentucky. I think Houston wins this game.
I agree. I watched a little of that game. With Ohio State, I watched most of the second half, I guess, and I thought they were pretty good. They got they got up and down the floor. They were athletic. They kind of shut Ohio State down when they needed to,
yep.
And I think that they have enough to get by Kentucky. Kelvin Sampson's a good coach, so he's got a pedigree. So I'll go ahead and pick Houston.
Yeah. All right. So if we had to pick what team was going to be in the Final Four in each region.
So repicking the Final Four?
Repicking the Final Four with the team. So we'll start with the East. Duke, Virginia Tech, LSU, Michigan State. Who are you going to pick?
Duke.
I'm going to pick Michigan State.
All right, it's fair.
Because that's the only team that's going to win me.
All right, there you go.
All right, in the West, Gonzaga, Florida State, Texas Tech, and Michigan.
I'm going with Florida State. That was my pick as second behind Buffalo. And since the Buffalo Bulls could not get done for me, then I'm going to go with the Seminoles.
Okay, I'm going to go with the team up north. I won't. That's all I'm going to say. All right, the next region, Virginia, Oregon, Purdue, Tennessee. I'm going to go Purdue.
Gosh, this is a yikes bracket.
I'm going to go Purdue.
I'm going to go Virginia, even though I'm going to go Virginia. I don't like the pick, but I don't like any of those teams. So,
and then the last one, North Carolina, Auburn, Houston, Kentucky. I think we're in agreement.
Carolina.
Yeah.
All right. So we both still have our final game prediction alive.
I picked Michigan State.
What's your official Hoopheads pod prediction? You're now your 14 bracket, you know.
I filled three brackets out. No, okay. So I'm rooting for Michigan East.
Listen, tell us who the final game is.
It's going to be Duke Carolina.
All right, who wins it?
Carolina.
All right, good. We're in agreement.
Sorry, Alan.
We're in agreement. Carolina.
All right. I don't know. Is there any other important things from the bracket? Bracketology or
no? I think we covered everything in the tournament. There's not a whole lot else to say. I think it's been a relatively
chalk
and not many buzzer beaters. I mean, there hasn't really been
buzzer beaters. Did you see
the Jeremy Lamb buzzer beater?
Yeah, that was a great buzzer beater. Yeah, it's nice. NBA here, but yeah. My goodness, the guy if the guy doesn't deflect that ball, that shot doesn't hit the ceiling.
I mean, that thing almost hit the ceiling.
That was a moonball.
That was the highest shot trajectory I've ever seen in my life for a half-court shot. That thing was, I think it was almost out of the picture on some of the video.
My favorite tweet that came out of after all that was someone saying, oh man, the Oklahoma City misused Jeremy Lamb. What were they thinking? I'm like sitting here thinking, Jeremy Lamb has underproduced his whole career essentially in the NBA. Yeah.
He's the second best player on the Hornets. Sorry about that, Kemba Walker. Right? Who's the second best player on the Hornets?
I don't know.
Zeller? Frank the Tank?
Probably Jeremy Lamb. I mean,
Malik Monk?
Does Malik Monk
even play?
I don't even know if he plays, but Tony Parker, baby.
Well, Tony Parker 15 years ago, not old man Tony Parker, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know. The Hornets are still alive in the playoffs, but they are that shot did it.
Magic, I think I looked at the standings today. Magic's like a game out behind the Heat. I still think the Heat are going to hold out, and then Brooklyn's actually won a couple games, so they're in the six still.
Hey, yeah, they're doing a good job.
So we're going to come back with an NBA pod as we get closer to wrapping up.
We're going to do one next Friday, next Monday, because we're going to do it during halftime of the Cavs-Phoenix game, the Tank-Palooza.
Yes, we do have to take the Tank-Palooza for sure.
So,
and then we got some good things. I got an idea that I don't think I even have shared with Jason as we go into the playoffs of how we can go through and kind of do something a little bit unusual. So we'll be back.
I like that.
We'll be back.
That's what we call a tease in the business.
That is. That's it. That's it. I don't want to spoil that exciting news that we'll have as we get closer to the playoffs. So to everyone out there, thanks for listening to this special March Madness edition of the Hoopheads podcast, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.